The office was the size of a tennis court. It was paneled in oak and had a huge dark rug on the floor, threadbare with vacuuming. The desk was large and oak, and DeWitt was in the chair behind it. He was somewhere between 50 and 55, dried out and stringy, with thinning gray hair shaved down close to his scalp. He had half-closed gray eyes, and he was using them to watch their approach with an expression Reacher read as halfway between curiosity and irritation. "Sit down," he said. "Please." There were leather visitor chairs drawn up near the desk. The office walls were crowded with mementos, but they were all battalion and division mementos, war game trophies, battle honors, old platoon photographs in faded monochrome. There were pictures and cutaway diagrams of a dozen different helicopters, but there was nothing personal to DeWitt on display, not even family snaps on the desk. "How can I help you folks?" he asked. His accent was the bland army accent that comes from serving all over the world with people from all over the country. He was maybe a Midwesterner, originally. Maybe from somewhere near Chicago, Reacher thought. "I was an MP major," he said, and waited. "I know you were. We checked." A neutral reply, nothing there at all. No hostility, but no approval either. "My father was General Garber," Jody said. DeWitt nodded without speaking. "We're here in a private capacity," Reacher said. There was a short silence. "A civilian capacity, in fact," DeWitt said slowly. Reacher nodded. "Strike one. It's about a pilot called Victor Hobie. You served with him in Vietnam." DeWitt looked deliberately blank. He raised his eyebrows. "Did I?" he said. "I don't remember him." Strike two. Uncooperative. "We're trying to find out what happened to him." Another short silence, then DeWitt nodded slowly, amused. "Why? Was he your long-lost uncle? Or maybe he was secretly your father? Maybe he had a brief, sad affair with your mother when he was her pool boy? Or did you buy his old childhood home and find his long-lost teenage diaries hidden behind the wainscoting with a 1968 issue of Playboy magazine?" Strike three. Aggressively uncooperative. The office went silent again. There was the thumping of rotor blades somewhere in the far distance. Jody hitched forward on her chair. Her voice was soft and low in the quiet room. "We're here for his parents, sir. They lost their boy 30 years ago, and they've never known what happened to him. They're still grieving, General." DeWitt looked at her with the gray eyes and shook his head. "I don't remember him, I'm very sorry." "He trained with you right here at Walters," Reacher said. "You went to Rucker together and you sailed to Chi Nong together. You served the best part of 2 tours together, flying slicks out of Pleiku." "Your old man in the service?" DeWitt asked. Reacher nodded. "The Corps. 30 years. Semper Fi." "Mine was 8th Air Force," DeWitt said. "World War II. Flying bombers out of East Anglia and England all the way to Berlin and back. You know what he told me when I signed up for helicopters?" Reacher waited. "He gave me some good advice," DeWitt said. "He told me, don't make friends with pilots, because they all get killed, and it just makes you miserable." Reacher nodded again. "You really can't recall him." DeWitt just shrugged. "Not even for his folks?" Jody asked. "Doesn't seem right they'll never know what happened to their boy, does it?" There was silence. The distant rotor blades faded to nothing. DeWitt gazed at Jody. Then he spread his small hands on the desk and sighed heavily. "Well, I guess I can recall him, a little," he said. "Mostly from the early days. Later on, when they all started dying, I took the old man's advice to heart. Kind of closed in on myself, you know."
"So what was he like?" Jody asked.
"What was he like?" DeWitt repeated. "Not like me, that's for sure. Not like anybody else I ever knew, either. He was a walking contradiction. He was a volunteer, you know that? I was, too, and so were a lot of the guys. But Vic wasn't like the others. There was a big divide back then between the volunteers and the drafted guys.
The volunteers were all rah-rah boys, you know, going for it because they believed in it. But Vic wasn't like that. He volunteered, but he was about as mousy quiet as the sulkiest draftee ever saw. But he could fly like he was born with a rotor blade up his ass.
So he was good, Jody prompted.
Better than good, DeWitt replied. Second only to me in the early days, which is saying something, because I was definitely born with a rotor blade up my ass. And Vic was smart with the book stuff. I remember that. He had it all over everybody else in the classroom.
Did he have an attitude problem with that? Reacher asked. Trading favors for help?
DeWitt swung the gray eyes across from Jody. You've done your research. You've been in the files.
We just came from the NPRC, Reacher said.
DeWitt nodded neutrally. I hope you didn't read my jacket.
Supervisor wouldn't let us, Reacher said.
We were anxious not to poke around where we're not wanted, Jody said.
DeWitt nodded again.
Vic traded favors, he said. But they claimed he did it in the wrong way. There was a little controversy about it, as I recall. You were supposed to do it because you were glad to help your fellow candidates, you know? For the good of the unit, right? You remember how that shit went?
He stopped and glanced at Reacher, amused. Reacher nodded. Jody's being there was helping him. Her charm was inching him back towards approval.
But Vic was cold about it, DeWitt said. Like it was all just another math equation. Like X amount of lift moves the chopper off the ground, like this much help with that complicated formula gets his boots pulled up. They saw it as cold.
Was he cold? Jody asked.
DeWitt nodded. Emotionless. The coldest guy I ever saw. It always amazed me. At first I figured it was because he came from some little place where he'd never done anything or seen anything, but later I realized he just felt nothing. Nothing at all. It was weird, but it made him a hell of a tremendous flyer.
Because he wasn't afraid, Reacher asked.
Exactly, DeWitt said. Not courageous, because a courageous guy is somebody who feels the fear but conquers it. Vic never felt it in the first place. It made him a better war flyer than me. I was the one passed out of Rucker, head of the class, and I've got the plaque to prove it, but when we got in country, he was better than me. No doubt about it.
In what kind of way? DeWitt shrugged, like he couldn't explain it.
We learned everything as we went along. Just made it all up. Fact is, our training was shit. It was like being shown a little round thing and being told this is a baseball, and then getting sent straight out to play in the major leagues. That's something I'm trying to put right. Now I'm here running this place. I never want to send boys out as unprepared as we were.
Hobie was good at learning on the job? Reacher asked.
The best, DeWitt said. You know anything about helicopters in the jungle?
Reacher shook his head. Not a lot.
First main problem is the LZ, DeWitt said. LZ, landing zone, right? You got a desperate bunch of tired infantry under fire somewhere. They need exfiltrating. They get on the radio and our dispatcher tells them, sure, make us an LZ and we'll be right over to pull you out. So they use explosives and saws and whatever the hell else they got, and they blast a temporary LZ in the jungle. Now, a Huey with the rotor turning needs a space exactly 48 feet wide and 57 feet 9.7 inches long to land in. But the infantry is tired and in a big hurry, and Charlie is raining mortars down on them, and generally they don't make the LZ big enough, so we can't get them out. This happened to us two or three times, and we're sick about it. And one night, I see Vic studying the leading edge of the rotor blade on his Huey. So I say to him, what are you looking at? And he says, these are metal. I'm thinking, like, what else would they be, bamboo? But he's looking at them. Next day, we're called to a temporary LZ again, and sure enough, the damn thing is too small, by a couple of feet all around. So I can't get in, but Vic goes down anyway. He spins the chopper around and around and cuts his way in with the rotor, like a gigantic flying lawnmower. It was awesome.
bits of tree flying everywhere. He pulls out 7 or 8 guys, and the rest of us go down after him and get all the rest. That became SOP afterward, and he invented it, because he was cold and logical, and he wasn't afraid to try. That maneuver saved hundreds of guys over the years. Literally hundreds, maybe even thousands.
Impressive, Reacher said.
You bet your ass impressive, DeWitt said back. Second big problem we had was weight. Suppose you were out in the open somewhere, like a field. The infantry would come swarming in on you until the damn chopper was too heavy to take off. So your own gunners would be beating them off and leaving them there in the field, maybe to die. Not a nice feeling. So one day Vic lets them all on board. And sure enough, he can't get off the ground. So he shoves the stick forward and sort of skitters horizontally along the field until the airspeed kicks in under the rotor and unsticks him. Then he's up and away, the running jump. It became another SOP, and he invented it too. Sometimes he would do it downhill, even down the mountainsides, like he was heading for a certain crash, and then up he went. Like I told you, we were just making it up as we went along. And the truth is, a lot of the good stuff got made up by Victor Hobie.
You admired him, Jody said.
DeWitt nodded. Yes, I did. And I'm not afraid to admit it.
But you weren't close, he shook his head.
Like my daddy told me, don't make friends with the other pilots. And I'm glad I didn't. Too many of them died. How did he spend his time? Reacher asked. The files show a lot of days you couldn't fly. Weather was a bitch, a real bitch. You got no idea. I want this facility moved someplace else. Maybe Washington State, where they get some mists and fogs. No point training down in Texas and Alabama if you want to go fighting someplace you get weather. So how did you spend the downtime?
Me?
I did all kinds of things. Sometimes I partied, sometimes I slept. Sometimes I took a truck out and went scavenging for things we needed.
What about Vic? Jody asked. What did he do?
DeWitt just shrugged again. I have no idea. He was always busy, always up to something, but I don't know what it was. Like I told you, I didn't want to mix with the other flyers.
Was he different on the second tour? Reacher asked.
DeWitt smiled briefly. Everybody was different second time around.
In what way? Jody asked.
Angrier, DeWitt said. Even if you signed up again right away, it was 9 months minimum before you got back. Sometimes a whole year. Then you got back and you figured the place had gone to shit while you were away. You figured it had gotten sloppy and half-assed. Facilities you'd built would be all falling down. Trenches you'd dug against the mortars would be half full of water. Trees you'd cleared away from the helicopter parking would be all sprouting up again. You'd feel your little domain had been ruined by a bunch of know-nothing idiots while you were gone. It made you angry and depressed. And, generally speaking, it was true. The whole damn thing went steadily downhill, right out of control. The quality of the personnel just got worse and worse.
So you'd say Hobie got disillusioned, Reacher asked.
DeWitt shrugged. I really don't remember much about his attitude. Maybe he coped okay. He had a strong sense of duty, as I recall.
What was his final mission about?
The gray eyes suddenly went blank, like the shutters had just come down. I can't remember.
He was shot down, Reacher said. Shot out of the air, right alongside you. You can't recall what the mission was?
We lost 8,000 helicopters in Nam, DeWitt said. 8,000, Mr. Reacher, beginning to end. Seems to me I personally saw most of them go down, so how should I recall any particular one of them?
What was it about? Reacher asked again.
Why do you want to know? DeWitt asked back.
It would help me.
With what? Reacher shrugged. With his folks, I guess. I want to be able to tell them he died doing something useful.
DeWitt smiled, a bitter, sardonic smile. Worn and softened at the edges by 30 years of regular use.
Well, my friend, you sure as hell can't do that.
Why not?
because none of our missions were useful. They were all a waste of time, a waste of lives. We lost the war, didn't we?
Was it a secret mission?
There was a pause, silence in the big office. Why should it be secret? DeWitt asked back, neutrally.